Good afternoon. A few weeks ago, Steve Kuhn gave a very good sermon, basing it on tabernacles and the book of Ecclesiastes. When I heard him launch into it, I thought, oh, nuts, or other Anglo-Saxon adjectives, that he stole the whole subject, I thought. And I was sitting there for a few minutes, just worried. Fortunately, the overlap was small. So I'll start today with some thoughts similar to where Steve began, and you're permitted to have a deja vu feeling. Early on in my calling with God, I always found it very interesting and maybe a little puzzling that at least in Judaism, the one book of the Bible that was read at this time of year, during the course of the Feast of Tabernacles, was the book of Ecclesiastes. At first glance, that book always seemed filled with negative viewpoints, looking at the downside of life rather than the glorious future God has waiting for us, which this time of year celebrates. But it didn't take long to see the many tie-ins between Ecclesiastes and the fall festivals of God. In fact, that book has long been one of my favorites, and I'd certainly encourage you to give it a review during this Feast of Tabernacles. You'll find it operates on many levels, far too many to just cover today in this brief time. Suffice to say that on the one hand, the book's author makes it very plain that without God, life is useless. And that even with God, on the other hand, if we're only living for this life, it's still useless. No matter how you want to view our time in the flesh, in the end, it truly is altogether vanity. Not just vanity in the sense of temporary, transitory, fleeting, but vanity in the truest sense, based in vain human ego. So much of our lives revolve around that fatal flaw. Whole societies rise and fall based on that fatal vanity, and man can never find his way out of it. The author of Ecclesiastes knew the answer. God was the only way out of it. The only way to keep our bearings on life, the only way to understand ultimate purpose, to be able to face both the glorious victories of life and the glorious failures. Reviewing that book makes us look at the fact reflected in the Old Testament view of the Feast of Tabernacles, that we're living in temporary dwellings every day. We are temporary dwellings. Our lives are not forever in this flesh, and there's nothing we can do to prevent our own end. It'll come as sure as the sun will rise, and someday it's going to rise without us. Of course, as you get older, you can better see the sense of it. The fact that this life doesn't go on forever becomes one of the greater comforts if you're learning the lessons God's teaching. I'm not saying we should necessarily reach a point where death is a desirable thing, even though sometimes it can be. It's more a case of an old Woody Allen saying, "I'm not afraid of dying, I just don't want to be there when it happens." That's normal. Facing our own mortality may be a necessary thing, but it's not meant to be a lovely thing, or the Bible wouldn't call death an enemy, which it is. It's a very humbling thing in life to reach a point where you realize that the days ahead are fewer than the days behind. So as Ecclesiastes points out, death, the end of this life, simply is. We can't escape it. Therefore, as David wrote in Psalm 39, verse 4, "Show me, O Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting is my life." The implication being that we should spend our time in this life always aware of God and his purposes, never allowing ourselves to lose sight of that and the goals that lie beyond. And that reflects brilliantly on the Feast of Tabernacles. Because when we see the feast, as we can understand it from a Christian viewpoint, we can see the entire hope of humanity. We can see the fulfillment of our every hope and dream. We can see a time wherein God, through Jesus ruling here on earth, will begin the healing process of the entire human race, and we'll be able to share in that. That's a dream worth living for as long as we have life. Throughout history, mankind has sought utopia, and he's going to get it, just not the way he expected. When Paul wrote in Hebrews 4 that a Sabbath rest remains for the people of God, he was reflecting on the millennial rule of Christ, just as every weekly Sabbath reflects that future, just as the fall holy days reflect that future. But it won't just be 1,000 years of rest for us. It'll be a Sabbath of rest for the entire planet, for the entire human race, a time for people to finally understand God and why they were created, a time to learn what life was meant to be, what work was meant to be, in ways that even we can't understand now. We're still too much a part of this present world. What God has in store, the true re-education that he has in mind, is a far more sweeping and magnificent thing than anything we can conjure or anticipate. So the scripture says in 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9, that what God has prepared for us is beyond anything the human mind can know or imagine. But during the feast, we can taste a small bit of it. For that one long week, we can know what it's like to not have to perform for our supper, to be able to both physically and spiritually rest from the worldly grind that works on us day in and day out for the rest of the year. From the beginning, that's what God intended. He knew that without the weekly and annual Sabbaths, our worldly pursuits would simply overcome us. He designed the right type of vacation, a paid vacation, so that his people would be forced, so to speak, to set aside their daily lives and consider bigger things. Keeping the feast forces our stubborn minds to focus on something beyond today and this short human life. It's a vivid reminder that there's something better in store. To paraphrase a well-known verse, without that vision, the people surely do perish. Without that vision, society dies. Because without that vision, God remains unknown and ignored. The true values that make life work are lost and lives are ruined. People lose their bearings until nothing makes sense. And society degenerates into chaos and confusion, just as we're seeing today all around the world. And we're no different. Ecclesiastes assures us of that. Without keeping that vision and purpose foremost, without that clear vision and a firm relationship with our God, we will surely perish. We're not immune to the vanity of this human life. So God commands his feasts to keep us in remembrance of the things that count. Because in the end, nothing matters in this life except what type of people we've become. That stepping aside, which the feast represents, is something that's meant to aid our walk through this brief, vain life. It's meant to give us perspective, as any fundamental change will do. When Mark Twain was a young man, he managed to get a post on a San Francisco newspaper, and then managed to get himself sent to Hawaii, or the Sandwich Islands, as they were called then, and for an extended stay. He traveled to each of the islands and wrote this about one of them. I went to Maui to stay a week and remained five. I never spent so pleasant a month before or bade any place goodbye so regretfully. I have not once thought of business or care or human toil or trouble, or sorrow, or weariness, and the memory of it will remain with me always. Someday, those emotions will be reflected throughout the human race. Consider that. Imagine the planet finally at rest, at peace, safe. Imagine human beings able to reach their potential, but not at the expense of their souls as in this present age. The Feast of Tabernacles pictures that time, and that bears some thought. A few years ago, I mentioned in a sermonette that obscure word that we find so often in the Psalms, Selah. At its most basic, the word is like a musical instruction of where to place a pause before continuing. But the root of the word means to stop, pause, and consider, as if to say you've just heard something of great import. Now pause and consider what you've heard. This life doesn't want to give us that time. And yet, as David alone in the hills as a boy tending his flocks, we need that time to quiet ourselves so that we can hear the still small voice of our God. The weekly Sabbath and the Feast of Tabernacles are given so that we can have that time. Time with each other, yes, and as God instructs, time to enjoy the fruits of our labors, but also time to step aside from our lives, just as God knew we would have to do, so that we can draw even closer to Him rather than letting the activity overwhelm us as it often can during the course of the year. It's a time to pause and consider your calling and the vision of the kingdom, the very purpose of our lives. And if we dwell in God during this festival, if we allow ourselves to envision the millennial reign of Christ on earth, at least as best we can, if we allow that sure future to permeate our being so that we never forget what we're really living for and what a great hope this world really has, then nothing will ever turn us aside. And then when we keep the feast, or any feast in any given year, for as long as we live, we'll be able to echo the words spoken by Mark Twain. I never spent so pleasant a time before, or bade anything goodbye so regretfully. I have not once thought of business or care or human toil or trouble or sorrow or weariness, and the memory of it will remain with me always. Have a good feast.